Welcome to Dairy Livestream. I'm your host, Corey Geiger, managing editor of Hordes Dairymen. We are broadcasting from the Cheese Cave, our studio in downtown Fort Atkinson at the historic W.D. Horde & Sons Company building commissioned by Wisconsin Governor W.D. Horde, who started Hordes and founded Hordes Dairymen in 1885. Our conversation today will focus on the topic, sustainability, dairy's position in the marketplace. During this conversation, we'll go far deeper into sustainability. We will look beyond sustainability as it relates to the environment and discuss dairy's role in social and economic sustainability. This is the second episode in a three-part series on sustainability. On July 21, we produced the episode titled Sustainability, What Can We Do on the Farm? That webcast is available at our Hordes Dairymen YouTube channel. Dairy Livestream is also available in a podcast form on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and anywhere you listen to a podcast. Search for Dairy Livestream from the convenience of your smartphone. On August 18th, the third part of the sustainability series will focus on sustainability, renewable natural gas. And it's estimated that 10% of our nation's dairy cows now supply that renewable energy source. Today, however, let's turn our attention to dairy's role in social, economic, and nutrition sustainability. Before we hear from our first panelist, Greg Miller, let's turn to a poll question. Dairy foods are the leading source for what nutrients of public health concern? So you can check all those that apply, and the options are calcium, iron, potassium, vitamin C, and vitamin D. So I will give one hint, there's more than one correct answer to this. And our source for this data will be the United States Department of Agriculture and the United States Department of Health and Human Services. So we'll give a few more moments for our audience to go ahead and answer that poll question. And let's go ahead. We got well over two-thirds of our audience that signed in on that one. And calcium certainly is top of the list. 98% of you got that right. Vitamin D, 87% of you got that one included. And the other one is potassium. There's three of them. So calcium, potassium, and vitamin D. Iron and vitamin C are not correct answers. To open this discussion, we invite Greg Miller to Dairy Livestream. Greg is well-versed in human nutrition, having earned a PhD in that important discipline. What's more, Greg is a member of four editorial boards for nutrition and health journals. Greg serves as Chief Science Officer and Executive Vice President of Research and Regulatory and Scientific Affairs for the National Dairy Council and Dairy Management, Inc. The National Dairy Council has been an authority on nutrition for over a century. In addition, Greg is an adjunct professor in the Department of Food and Nutrition at the University of Illinois. Greg, this dairy sustainability discussion has many layers, and that definitely includes nutrition. Let's talk about that important role.
Yeah. Hi, Corey. Thanks for having me. I'm really happy to be here. You know, what I wanted to do is kind of start out with, why are we talking about food system sustainability and its ability to deliver nutrition? I mean, I think right now our generation is facing one of the greatest challenges it's ever faced. And that's this growing population that we saw in the earlier poll, where we're moving from a population of about 8 billion people up to a population of about 10 billion people by 2050. So that means that we are going to have to significantly increase the amount of food we produce in the world. Some estimates out of FAO are as high as 70% more food than we are currently producing today. That's a lot of food to produce. And it's not going to be enough just to produce enough food. We have to produce enough of the right foods, because it's about not just feeding people, it's about nourishing people. We're going to see the middle class triple by 2030, and that's going to create increased demand for more nutrient-rich foods like meat, dairy, eggs, other animal-source foods, more fruits and vegetables, nuts, seeds, legumes. And we want to produce these foods using less natural resources. So that's the huge challenge. It's to deliver great nutrition from a food system that minimizes its use of natural resources. And when we talk about food systems transformation, there are a couple of issues that are really driving that sense of urgency of why we need to transform the food systems. Of course, in the center of the bullseye are environmental degradation issues and climate change. That's really causing a sense of urgency in terms of the transformation of food systems. The other key core issue is the increasing rates of malnutrition. We just had a report that came out earlier this year called the SOFI report, the state of food insecurity across the globe. And it showed that up to over 800 million people are still food insecure across the globe. 3 billion people can't afford a healthy diet. There are so many issues. And not only are there growing rates of malnutrition, but we also talk about obesity and overweight when we talk about malnutrition, because there's so many people across the globe who are getting more than enough calories, but the problem is they're not getting them from nutrient-rich foods. So while they've got plenty of calories, they still have a nutrient-poor diet. And with this increasing rates of obesity and overweight, we're seeing increased rates of chronic diseases, what we call the non-communicable diseases, like increased rates of cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, stroke, cancer, and that's all related to diet. And those increasing rates of chronic diseases are causing healthcare costs to go up at a very alarming rate across the globe. It puts tremendous pressure on the economies of societies across the globe. So these two things are creating a sense of urgency for why we need to transform the food system. The good news for dairy is that dairy can play an important role in being a part of the solution. Dairy works within all the domains of sustainability. And when we talk about the different domains of sustainability, we're talking about, as you mentioned, social, economic, health, and environmental. And dairy plays a role in all those. The good news is dairy is an affordable, nutrient-rich food that's accessible. People like it. It's versatile and can be a part of almost any type of dietary pattern. So dairy has an important role to play as a part of the solution. And again, the good news from a U.S. dairy point of view is that we have a lot of the data now to show that. And I thank America's dairy farmers out there for their investment in science. Because of their investment in science, we have the knowledge and new insights to sit at the table and be able to demonstrate the role and the value dairy plays in a sustainable food system that delivers great nutrition for good health.
Thank you, Greg. As a reminder to our audience, when you hear comments from our panelists, please submit your questions into the GoToWebinar question panel. The earlier you ask a question, the more likely we will get it on air. Before we hear from Judith Byrons, let's go to another poll question. What is the largest social safety net in the world? Select one of the following: Social Security, health insurance, public transportation, or school lunch. So go ahead and answer that. And again, we're looking at this worldwide here for perspective of our audience. And this is important to the entire sustainability discussion, especially as it relates to dairy. So let's go ahead and close that poll question. The correct answer, we believe, is school lunch. And our next guest, Judith, will tell us more. Like Greg, Judith is steeped in dairy acumen, having earned a degree in human nutrition and having traveled the globe for dairy. Judith is the chief executive for Dairy UK, is in UK standing for the United Kingdom. On the global stage, Judith has served as president for the International Dairy Federation, which has roots tracing back to 1903. And the International Dairy Federation represents and brings together dairy industries from over 45 countries around the globe. Judith, you shared with me that sustainability in any one part of the world can be explained as where you sit on the matter depends on where you stand. Please expound upon that statement.
Thanks, Corey. Thanks for having me. And hello to everybody on the live stream and listening to this later. Look, I think first I want to say that Greg has done an excellent job in setting out the big challenges for humanity and for the planet in terms of the issues around hunger and the issues around planetary degradation. But like many other things in life, it's important that we recognize up front that people will experience sustainability in different ways. And like many other things in life, where you stand in life depends on where you sit. And if you sit in the US or in the UK, where you have access to a good amount of food, then your perspective on what a sustainable marketplace is and where dairy sits within that is probably going to be very different to the person who's sitting in a developing nation, who's living in poverty, who's not experiencing food availability, who's seeing crops die in the ground, animals die because of flooding or drought or disease or conflict. So their view of sustainability and what their sustainable future might be, may be getting enough food on the table to feed their family, to survive, and to be able to have their farming business or whatever it is they're doing in life to try and have a better future for their family. So they really see the value of dairy nutrition, and they aspire to having dairy and animal-based products in their diet because for them, nutrition is really that central aspect. And again, if you look at countries where people may not be living in desperate poverty, but who may be growing towards a middle-class income, there's aspiration there also to have the nutritional benefits of animal-based products like dairy. And it's not for, you know, no reason that sometimes in around the world, we see that farmers who are growing crops where they may get an income from their crops twice a year, as soon as they manage to get a little bit more money, one of the first things they do is they buy an animal that they can milk, whether it's a cow or whether it's a goat, because they can serve that nutrition from that product to their family every day. And they can also sell some at market and have a little bit of an economic benefit and a little bit of a livelihood boost. So I think we sometimes, as we sit in countries like the US and the UK, where we see a lot of pressure from pressure groups, from groups who quite frankly put out there a lot of alarmist messages around dairying and around animal agriculture, a lot of pressure from media who are giving out false information, we can forget that there is quite a lot of appreciation for dairy in the world, and that in other parts of the world, there's quite a demand for our products. And even within our own countries, I mean, I'm in the UK, and in the UK, dairy is in 96% of homes. Yes, for absolute sure, our consumers are becoming more flexitarian and they're consuming dairy alongside other products, but they're not turning away from dairy. But we, like every other sector, have a responsibility towards continuous sustainable development. So that's what I meant by that comment, Corey. But I would also like to say that obviously there are themes that unite dairy across the world, whatever country you're in terms of the benefits that it can offer, and nutrition's at the heart of it. There's no better place to start than nutrition. And in terms of that poll that we just saw, I think it's worth, even though people know this, it's worth just reminding people that our products, they're in dietary guidelines worldwide for a reason. They're naturally nutrient-rich foods. But they also play a huge part in terms of school milk programs and school feeding programs. And the World Food Programme put out a report in 2020 that said that national school feeding programs delivered school meals to more children at that point in history than any other point in human history, making school feeding the most extensive social safety net in the world. And that is important, not just for the nutrition of the children on the day that they have that food, but they're for their future health and well-being. Now, when COVID happened, that a lot of those school feeding programs closed, particularly in countries that were poorer. And a lot of those children, that's tragedy because it's a nutritional opportunity that's lost. So one thing that we are seeing at the moment, and Greg will know this very well, for example, within the pre-summit for the food systems summit being run by the United Nations, is talk about the fact that we need to build back better. And one of the things that we can do to build back better is really take care of our children's nutrition. I know that in the UK and in the US, we kept our school food programs going, or our school milk programs in many places, and so did many other countries in the world where dairy really stepped up to try and do that. And I was quite interested at the pre-summit for the Food Systems Summit last week in listening to your Deputy Agriculture Secretary, who was very strong in saying that one of the things that the US would be going after in terms of the summit was trying to make sure that there were zero hunger, that we were reducing hunger in the world, because it's so important for our future kids. Some of the other themes where dairy does good in the world, well, obviously it's important for individual livelihoods. Greg talked about the numbers earlier on. It's also good for national economies. And I think one of the things that I'm seeing in the UK at the moment is very much a recognition from the government here when it comes to sustainability, that sustainability will become mainstream in everything. So environment and sustainability pillars will not sit in isolation from other government policies. They will be mainstreamed. So everything that the government does will have a sustainability aspect to it. And I'm also seeing that across Europe, if you think of the European Commission's Green Deal, Farm to Fork. And there's an awful lot of talking about, if you want to trade going forward, you will certainly need to be a sustainable industry. And I think we can be, there's no perfect sector. We know there's no perfect sector, but we know that the dairy sector is and has been showing leadership. And we need to continue to do so. We need to continue to do that to operate and to be successful. And in certain parts of the world, we also need to be very mindful of the fact that we're not communicating the leadership that we're showing to consumers in the way that resonates with them. And that can also at times result in tension, because not all of our consumers, particularly those who are living in urban areas, are connected with the land or where their food comes from. And I think we can certainly do a better job here in the UK, because we know that our consumers are bombarded by media messages that are alarmist, and we need to explain things to them and be transparent and stop using language that doesn't resonate with them. When we want to talk as a dairy sector about circular economies, we have to remember that the consumer doesn't want to talk about the circular economy. What the consumer wants to talk about is the future of the planet, whether there will be a planet for future generations. So we really have to find our way across the world, wherever we are, into having that good story for the consumer. And one of the things that I have observed is that there's very often a tension when it comes to dairy and plant-based. And as somebody with a doctorate in nutrition, it breaks my heart, because when I was doing my initial, you know, nutrition degree many years ago, and when I was doing my doctoral studies, one of the basic backbones of nutrition is that in order to have a healthy and balanced diet, you eat from varied food groups. It's the easiest way to get the nutrients that you need. And a plant-based diet should really be a diet that has plants as its basis, but is inclusive of all other food groups. And animal nutrition can really improve the quality of that diet. But unfortunately, that term has been hijacked by anti-dairy groups and others to represent an ideology where they'd like to exclude dairy foods. And that's a real shame. Now, I do know that many of our dairy companies are taking the opportunity of having their dairy products and also having plant-based products. And that can be great in terms of giving a return to the farmer and also an extra choice to the consumer, where our consumers are becoming more flexitarian and having both dairy and plant-based in their fridges. My only plea at times to companies, and I hope this doesn't offend anybody, is I see companies who have both products in their portfolios do an excellent job of promoting both products and maintaining the integrity of both products. But I also see companies where actually they undermine their dairy products in the way they promote their plant-based. So my plea to them is, with all of the great marketers that we have in the world, let's find a way to talk about the nutrition of both of those products. But ultimately, and I appreciate I've gone over time here, so I'll get off my high horse. We are important in feeding the world, and we need to remember the strong place that we have and continue to show leadership and find a better way to communicate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judith. And we're going to come back and talk about some of those topics you brought up, because of the questions that we're seeing here. As a reminder about questions, if you have a question for one of our panelists, please go ahead and type that into the questions portion of the GoToWebinar control panel. And before we invite Andy Novakovic, let's go to one final poll question. That question reads, how many people in the world depend on dairy to sustain their livelihoods? And as you think about that, we're going to be, I mean, these are dairy farmers, these are people that process milk, and everyone in the supply chain. Now, that number in the U.S. is a little bit smaller, but when you start thinking of all the dairy farmers around the world, how many people is that? So go ahead and answer that poll question, and we'll give you a little bit to respond. So we're over the midway point here, so let's go ahead and close that poll. The correct answer is 1 billion people. There's 600 million people on the planet that have dairy cows on farms, and another 400 million people being employed in full-time jobs relating to the dairy sector. That's a lot of people. And there's a good reason for that, because dairy delivers a very important food for humans. We welcome Cornell's Andy Novakovic to the program. Andy, let's look at dairy's role in social, economic, and nutrition from an economist's viewpoint. Welcome, Andy. Andy, you're on mute.
After 16 months of this, you'd think you'd figure it out, but not so much. Okay, as Corey has previously described, this session has a theme of sustainability in the marketplace. And when we think about sustainability, and certainly in the international circles that Greg and Judith and I have an opportunity to participate in, there's kind of three big ones that come up. One is the one that I think most of us think about with respect to the word sustainability, and that's environmental or ecological. And that discussion seems to be shaped by folks who think that dairy cows are bad for the environment. This is particularly ironic because those of us who've been in the dairy industry for a long time tend to think of dairy cows as this amazing vehicle for transforming stuff that human beings can't eat into a wonderfully nutritious food that's not just good for you, but tastes great in all its many, many forms as well. Another aspect of sustainability is around diets, and particularly how diets relate to health, something that Judith in particularly commented on. And this current conversation that we fret about kind of often feels like it begins with dairy is bad for you. I think Greg might want to comment on this, but I would say the U.S. conversation is actually a little bit less about that and maybe a little bit more about we have to be careful of having too much of a good thing. If you look at the dietary guidelines, it doesn't say dairy is bad for you. In fact, it says you should be having dairy every day. But it does say some people go a little overboard. By the way, it also says young children don't have enough dairy in their diet. So this is a little bit more about balance. The third element that comes into play is one that's referred to as socioeconomic, which has lots of different parts to it. But I think for a lot of us that are in the industry, a real key one is, can I make a living doing this? Can I make a living as a dairy farmer? Can I make a living as a dairy processor? Can I make a living as a guy who drives trucks that delivers the milk from the farms to the plants and all the other jobs that are in that supply chain that add up to some 1 billion people? A lot of this sustainability conversation sustainability in the marketplace, I think translates to our American ears as, are we holding our own? Are we going to be able to compete? Are we going to be able to survive? And I would be, I would very much like to say, yeah, okay, there's some element of that that we should be paying attention to, but the overwhelming story continues to be positive. And it really builds on the point that Greg made, that we have an expanding population that's going to need to be fed, but at the same time in a way that respects what we are doing to soil, to water, to air quality, and with an understanding that we have to pay attention to those resources in the long term as well. What I'd like to do, and hopefully can be fairly efficient about, is to build on a couple of the themes that, that Greg and Judith have so excellently started. And in particular, the issue of what is our customer and what are the characteristics of our customers, particularly over time. As I've studied dairy demand over my 40-plus year career, one of the things that I came to understand early on, that the single largest, most important driving factor that propels sales, that allows the U.S. dairy industry to almost double over the lifetime, over the time of my adult career, is simply population growth. There are more mouths to feed. And as that continues to be the case, we're going to need to produce more and more milk. Per capita consumption obviously plays a role. And if per capita is heading south while population is heading north, there is some balancing effect. But with rare exception, population has been the key major driver. So asking ourselves what's happening to population is pretty important. The United Nations publishes population estimates, current as well as projections, and is kind of the gold standard for this. The 10 billion people figure comes from those estimates. They actually have a low, medium, and high based on different assumptions about things like how many babies are going to be born and what are death rates going to be and how many people are going to have children and so on. The one that we typically pick for obvious reasons is the median projection, and that gives us the 10 billion number. Just to give you a sense of what difference the low and high make, the low projection for 2100, 80 years from now, is actually 7.3 billion people. In other words, the low projection has the world population shrinking compared to 2020. The high estimate is 15.6, almost doubling what we have in 2020. Now, these are not just guys throwing darts at a board. These are people making assumptions that they feel is within the range of plausibility. And so we have to conclude from this, there's a little bit uncertainty about where we're going. You throw in some climate change effects. You throw in the fact that we may be looking at a planet where some countries find that their shoreline is eroding, and that's where a lot of their population lives. Some countries where it's simply too hot to be outside and live and work, and you can come up with different scenarios. But let's focus on the middle range. Compared to the 7.8 billion people that the United Nations estimates to be on the planet in 2020, we should be looking at around 9.7 by 2050, and that will creep up a little bit further to 10.9. So most of these projections look at kind of sort of more rapid growth to the middle of the century and then kind of tapering off. Where is that population going to grow? If you look at the detailed estimates, which they have right down to the country, including island countries that most of us didn't even know was a name, almost everyone is increasing, but not everyone is increasing. But the real growth, in fact, really the only growth that's going to propel us forward is going to be coming from sub-Saharan Africa. Asia is not projected to increase significantly. India and China, the two largest countries by population in the world, are going to be experiencing slowing growth. China is already talking about it. India is projected to become the number one country in terms of population, but it too will taper off. China is already talking about lifting longstanding prohibitions on how many children you can have, and even giving people incentives to have more children. Japan is already in a shrinking mode and talking about how to deal with a society that is not producing a lot of babies and is increasingly a more geriatric population. A profile that is not at all different from what we expect to see in Europe in the coming years. Europe is already on the downward slope based on the midterm projections and is expected to shrink rather substantially over the course of the 21st century. The United States is projected to increase in size, but the major source of increase expected for the United States is through increasing immigration, not through birth rate or that sort of thing. This is pretty important to think about in terms of some of the more important conversations we're having today, including immigration policy. Where population is going to grow specifically, as along the lines that Greg mentioned, is in parts of the world that are low-income countries. You know, there can be rich people that live in a low-income country, but in the main, the country population is mostly lower income. And in places in the world where dairy is not currently a big part of their culture, either from the standpoint of agriculture or from the standpoint of foods. But as Judith alluded to, a lot of these countries are countries that are dairy friendly, that are friendly towards animal agriculture. When you talk to people about why don't you consume dairy products, it isn't because it's yucky, I don't like the taste, I think soybeans are normal. It's because I can't afford it. And if you give them the ability to afford animal proteins, a lot of folks will very gladly move in that direction. The other thing that's going to be, that we expect to see changing is the demographic composition. In 2020, across the world, the number of children, which I'm going to define as people under the age of 20, represent one third of the world population. Seniors, 70 and up, and oh, by the way, I'm not quite there yet, although it's getting closer every day, represent 6% of the world. By 2050, the number of children as a percentage of the total goes from one third to 28%. The number of seniors goes from 6% to 11%. By 2100, that 28% shrink down to 23% for children, and that 11% of seniors moves up to 17%. So we're going to have fewer children as a percentage, more seniors, lower birth rates, longer lifespans. It isn't just how do we feed 10 billion people. It's what are those 10 billion people? What do they look like? What is their income? What is their culinary and dietary preferences? How many of them are young people that we would expect would be more likely to drink milk? How many of them are older people who don't have as big an appetite, who aren't going to be drinking 3 or 4 glasses of milk a day, most likely, but are interested in getting a good nutrition, something potent, maybe in a smaller package related to appetite? These, I think, are important challenges, but also really terrific opportunities for an industry that is capable of producing a mind-blowing array of products that can achieve all kinds of different outcomes. I think, yep, we got more mouths to feed. Growth is going to be primarily in lower-income countries that do not have a strong dairy culture but are dairy-friendly. And we're going to have to adapt products to meet those populations, products that are affordable, that are highly nutritious, and that will help to increase and improve the nourishment of those countries as they gain economic stature. Seniors are a big market opportunity. There's a variety of ways nutritionally, and Greg and Judith could talk about this more, but that's a different solution than the one that we look at for children, and so on. So my point that I'd like to leave you with is 10 billion pounds is the beginning of a conversation. 10 billion people is the beginning of a conversation. But as is true every day of the week, who our customers are and what they want and our ability to give them what they want is going to be, I think, the single most important key to sustainability in the marketplace. Corey, back to you.
Thank you, Andy. I'm going to meld a couple questions that came in here from dairy farmers. They, you know, we work to produce a nutritious product on our farm, but we, as farmers, probably don't think about this every day. And so the question is, how does, and we're going to be talking nutrition here, how does nutrition sustainability of dairy foods, milk and cheese, compare with other protein-rich foods like poultry, pork, beef, fish, soy, and other legumes? And specifically, what differences might dairy deliver in minerals and vitamins or nutrients? So why is dairy so important in the diet? And Greg, why don't we start with you?
Okay, that'd be great. Yeah, well, I think, you know, as Judas has said, and, you know, we've got a great story to tell, and we just need to do a good job of getting out there and really, really telling it within all the various domains of sustainability, because dairy is nutrient rich and very affordable. And of course, you know, it's in the U.S., it's considered an essential source of 13 different nutrients that we require in our diet. Relative to other animal source foods, of course, they're all going to vary a little bit in terms of what they deliver. Meat products are going to deliver a little bit more iron. Of course, dairy, as we showed in the earlier poll, is the number one source of calcium, potassium, vitamin D in the U.S. diets, particularly for kids. And that's a good place to differentiate ourselves from the plant-based alternatives that are out there. Of course, they're not as well positioned as we are in terms of the nutrients that we contain, the bioavailability of the nutrients that come from dairy, and the versatility of dairy in terms of the products that you can make from it. So I think, you know, we need to lean into not only our nutrition story, which is one we've leaned into for a long time, but today that's not enough. Consumers want foods that's not only good for me, but it's good for the planet. It's affordable. I want to know it comes from farms where the animals are well taken care of and the people are well taken care of and paid well. And I think the U.S. dairy industry and other dairy sectors across the globe have responded very well to this. In the U.S., we have the FARM program, Farmers Assuring Responsible Management, which has been recognized by the International Standards Organization as the standard of care for animals. So I think we should take great pride in that story. We have one of the most affordable products out there in terms of the pennies you pay for nutrients that you get. Dairy is one of the most economical, accessible sources of nutrition for people. As Andy talked about the elderly and the children populations, yes, they have smaller appetites, but that's what makes dairy so vital and so important for that diet, is because it is so nutrient rich. Because they're not eating less, it's more important that they get those nutrient-rich foods like dairy. So dairy plays in all of the different dimensions of sustainability. You know, again, research that dairy farmers have supported clearly demonstrates the role and the value of dairy in reducing risk of chronic diseases like cardiovascular disease, type 2 diabetes, stroke. That was recognized by the scientific advisory panel that developed the dietary guidelines for Americans. They took some of the best and brightest scientists in the US and said, evaluate all the nutrition science that's out there and make recommendations to us, the US government, in terms of what we should recommend people eat. And they recommend 3 servings of dairy every day as a part of a healthy, balanced, plant-based diet. And so, you know, it can be, as Judith said, plant-based, but animal-sourced food optimized. And dairy helps to optimize those diets. So those are the best and brightest scientists in the U.S. evaluating all the available science and saying dairy needs to be a part of a healthy and sustainable diet. So I think it's not just our nutrition story we have to tell. Our farmers can now produce a gallon of milk today using 30% less water, 21% less land, with a 19% smaller carbon footprint from 2007 to 2017. We produce as much milk now with 9 million cows that we did back in 1944 with 26 million cows. We meet those sustainability standards In the U.S., we're only 2% of the greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. We're doing a good job. And as Judith said, we, the dairy sector globally, are leading the way in agriculture in terms of the bold things that we are doing. And when we get out and talk to people about it, they get really excited. You know, one of my job is to work part-time for Global Dairy Platform. And we work closely with NMPF, U.S. Dairy Export Council. We work with IDF. We work with Global Dairy Platform. All of us together are out there trying to tell our story at a global level. And it's particularly important now with the UN Food System Summit that's going to occur in September, where they're asking for bold commitments and bold changes for transforming the food system. Well, dairy has a great story to tell. And when we get a seat at the table and tell dairy story, I see these key thought leaders and policymakers going, what? Dairy's doing what? They've made bold commitments to be net zero by 2050. They've made claims about recycling water and being better stewards. They have these farm animal welfare programs that they are holding their farmers to work towards. They like get so surprised and are so excited to hear all the great things that we're doing. And what shows me that telling that story really works is when I was in one of the open forums for one of the UN Food System Summit action tracks, somebody asked a question about animal source foods and the role of animal source foods in sustainability, in particular dairy. And one of the key thought leaders, who's a leading voice in the food systems dialogue, defended dairy right away. She came in and said, hey, look, they've already made big commitments. They're already making substantial changes to the way they produce foods. They know they need to change. They're doing it and they're making those changes. They're much further down the path than you realize. So when we hear these other thought leaders being advocates for dairy, it helps me feel really good about the job we're doing in terms of communicating the dairy farmers' message and the dairy industry story, not only about the nutritional value, but the role it plays in a sustainable food system to deliver that great nutrition for health.
Judith, same question to you. With perspective from across the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, I mean, I really would echo an awful lot of what Greg has said here, certainly in terms of the composition of the foods. I won't add anything, but I think, you know, just from our perspective here in the UK, our dairy farmers have had a roadmap on sustainability for over 13 years. And it's now, and we've reduced food waste by 95%. We've increased our water efficiency. We've reduced our energy usage. We've reduced our carbon emissions. So the dairy sector here really took leadership. But one of the things that I think it's important to mention, and I hope that Greg will agree with this, is that one of the reasons we get traction when we go in and talk within in the UN system about what the dairy sector is doing is that globally we're very connected, and no matter what country you're in, people try and help each other out. So, you know, within IDF, we have a dairy sustainability outlook where we showcase to the world what people are doing to improve sustainability in their own countries. And of course, you got to remember that the dairy sector was the first sector to sign a declaration with the Food and Agriculture Organization, so that we committed to sustainable improvement, continuous sustainable improvement. And their signing of the declaration with us was in recognition that the dairy sector is invaluable when it comes to delivering a raft of the sustainable development goals. It would be really hard to deliver those without us. You couldn't feed the world without dairy. So I think every food has a place, but we need to recognize our importance. And yes, we need to continuously improve, but we also have to not always kick ourselves and realize that we're doing a lot of things that other people are not doing. And, you know, I don't want to offend anybody in other livestock sectors, but I wish our colleagues in some of the other livestock sectors would be as collaborative as we are in the dairy sector.
Thank you, Judith. You know, Andy, I'm going to send this question over to you. This is certainly, we've heard this type, if you're generating a milk check and you're listening to this discussion, Some people would say we've been hearing about population growth and dairy as a valued nutrition source for decades. And these two viewpoints certainly offer optimism for dairy. And it suggests we need to increase milk production. However, that this dairy farmer counters the reality is there's too much milk on the market 90% of the time. And this can be detrimental to milk price at the farm level. What do you see about the viability, or what he would say is the sustainability of the family farm in the next 4 to 5 years and beyond?
Yeah, so I think the, you know, it's a very sensible comment, but I think the answer is what we need is better mechanisms for coordinating supply growth and consumption growth. I'm going to put it right out there. I am not an advocate of government sponsored supply management systems, but I am a huge advocate of the industry taking initiatives to coordinate, to make sure that our production growth doesn't leap ahead of consumption growth. And, you know, you're always going to have situations where something's a little long and other times when something's a little short. But I think it's kind of like good news, bad news. I mean, the good news is American dairy farmers, and for that matter, a lot of dairy farmers around the world are really, really good at doing what they do. The tough side of that is sometimes we do it a little bit too well. We get ahead of consumption growth and we see price drop, which is a natural market reaction. To me, the answer is we got to come up with better ways of coordinating the decisions of whether it's 30,000 farmers in the United States or 600 million in the world to get their growth matching in line better with what we see for consumption growth. That's not a tall task. There's other industries that do that better than we do. It doesn't require a government edict. It does mean you don't always get to do what you want to do because that's what coordination requires. But that's the answer is, I think, better coordination. And the fact remains that if we didn't have that dairy demand growth, there would be just a heck of a lot fewer farms than there are now.
Thank you, Andy. You know, having had the opportunity to personally travel to countries like Vietnam and some of these, this next question talks about, let's face it, if we're dairy farmers, cows are little furnaces. Their rumens are great fermentation vats. They give off heat. And because of that, this person points out that the major population growth is forecast to be between the countries of the tropics, the Cancer and Capricorn. So the middle of the, you know, that equator, and that's where the real growth in dairy is going to be, but the real growth in milk production is going to be in these cooler climates. And so the question is, this really suggests that major milk producing countries will be exporting product to places in this area. And so there's going to be new markets and new things that happen. Can you comment? We'll probably start with Judith on this. How do we coordinate as a global, not only dairy industry, but coordinate this to consumers here in these population areas? Because it's not much being fun being a cow when it's over, you know, 75 degrees Fahrenheit, and you drop that to the Celsius scale. Judith?
Yeah, I think this is a really complicated situation to talk about because clearly that is where the growth is. And there are countries in the world which just have the climate and the tradition for producing milk very well. But if you're sitting within a UN food system, you're also very mindful of the need for smallholder farmers and looking after smallholder farmers and family farmers in those regions of the world so that they're not totally dependent on imports and that they have some of their own local food security. So that means you have to have that conversation and a balance between what those countries who already produce milk really well can do in terms of exporting and sending to countries where the food is needed and where the nutrition is needed, and nurturing the local industries. And I suppose if I think about this really, I think that the dairy sector just looking at Global Dairy Platform and what they are doing through DNA is, and Greg will know an awful lot more about that, which is the Dairy Nourishing Africa project, is really quite important because it's helping to build local infrastructure in a country in Africa, which will help that industry. But that's not taking away from the fact that the US or any other country can export to Tanzania. And I like to think of trade as increasing food security because you can't put all your eggs in one basket and hope nobody will sit on them. So we need both local industry and importers and exporters. So I think it's a great question and it's really complicated. And how you view it's different, I think, if you sit in industry than if you sit in the UN. And what we have to do is meet in the middle. But maybe, Greg, you could comment on DNA, because I think that's a great project.
Yeah, DNA is a great project. Dairy Nourishes Africa. And this was an initiative that came out of Global Dairy Platform to work in Tanzania to help their development of their dairy value chain. And they have experts who are coming in to help them understand their market, understand the processing capabilities and how to work from farmer to processor to consumer. One of the driving forces for this is a report that the GDP worked on with FAO. In fact, a couple of different reports. One showed that dairy development locally there can lift people out of poverty. And so that's an important thing. The kids can now go to school and get educated and they can eat better and healthier diets and women get empowered as well. And this is all important issues to the UN agencies. It also shows that it can reduce malnutrition and stunting in those areas where there's dairy development. And so I think like Judith said, there needs to be a balance between local markets and trade so that you have a balance. Because that dairy development locally is very important for a lot of the sustainability issues. And so I think it's a great project that shows the role and the value that dairy can play in a sustainable food system, even if it's a small one.
So the next question comes in here, and this dairy farmer says, it's great that the four of you understand milk's role in nutrition and sustainability, but how do we get that message to the consumer? He suggests that we might be being out-marketed by people who mislead consumers on animal agriculture. And is there some way, and one of his questions then becomes, is there a way to create a scannable link on packaging that gives consumers our human nutrition facts, sustainability facts, animal handling information, or some really short references? He's got a bunch of ideas here, but he says short references that can be easily accessed on a smartphone and can cement our place in consumers' minds.
Well, we have a website, dairygood.com or dairygood.org, where there's a lot of resources that people can go to find pieces of information around the nutritional value of dairy, the sustainability efforts, the commitments that we've made. And so I think that's a really good website to go and get some references and values with. And I'm glad to hear farmers talking about telling the story, because I think it's important that farmers do help tell the story, because they're the rock stars. If they're out there talking to consumers, consumers love hearing from the dairy farmers. And what we've learned at a global level as well too is the UN agencies love hearing from farmers as well too. We've through GDP and through IDF are working to bring more farmers to the table in these dialogues and discussions around the UN Food System Summit. Marilyn Hershey, the chair of DMI, came out and gave a presentation. They invited her back to lead off a discussion around the decade of action around family farms. For her being a woman and a family farmer owner, they love bringing them out. And so we've got now Steve Maddox from California. We got Charles Krause from Minnesota. They're out now talking at a global level as well. So I think locally, nationally, and globally, we need our farmers out there helping us tell that story, because they're rock stars.
Greg has made an excellent point, and it speaks to credibility in terms of who's telling the story. I'd like to add to that, and I certainly invite Greg and Judith to challenge me if they think I'm off base here, but you recall in Greg's opening remarks, he spoke about a very recent experience in which he was at a global conference. A question was asked about dairy that was probably kind of challenging to dairy, and somebody who wasn't the dairy guy told our story. And Greg made a point of saying how effective that was. And I'm positive that if Greg would have said the same thing, it would have had half or less of the impact. And I think that's the question we have to challenge ourselves with. How do we get other people to tell our story? You get a bunch of dairy people saying, hey, dairy's good for you. Okay, you know, you get a bunch of egg people saying, eggs, oh boy, something else. You know, blueberry guys, oh, antioxidants, my gosh, eat blueberries. You expect dairy people to talk to you about dairy. But if we can get to the people who are influencing my choice as a consumer and show them that we're not just being self-interested, that actually what we're saying is truthful, then I think we really have some impact.
I agree with you, Andy. I agree with both of you, actually. I think farmers are rock stars, and I think any poll that we do shows that people want to hear about food from the people who produce the food, because they can have an honest and open conversation with them. A farmer can say, not on my farm. You know, this is what I do. You know, this is how I do it. This is what it means to produce that food. This is what it takes. And I think farmers can bring a totally different perspective to talking to the consumer than a marketing agency. But I think you also need the influencers, because I'll go back to a few years ago when, think about wine. And in this country, everybody knows that there's polyphenols in red wine. They do not know what a polyphenol is, or an awful lot of them don't know what a polyphenol is, but they know there's polyphenols in red wine, and somebody's told them a glass of red wine is good for their heart. That has not come from the vintners. That has come from people talking about the wine industry and talking about the winemaking process. So sometimes we need those advocates to talk on our behalf. But I'd say to you, the world has changed. A few years ago, those advocates might have been celebrities, but it's not now, because celebrities go wherever the money is. So they will talk for dairy today and they'll talk for somebody else tomorrow. And then they'll do something else entirely. And then the consumer doesn't know what's going on and doesn't believe them. So it has to be real people, and it has to be influencers who are influencing the consumer. We have to do a better job at identifying who they are and bringing them into a community. Because one thing we have found is when you build a community, the community defends you. You don't have to defend yourself. And that can be quite powerful.
Yeah, so if we can get dairy farmers out into social media more, I see dairy farmers that I follow in social media, and they get huge followings. People love seeing them posting up about their cows and their farms and what they're doing, and that knowing they're available to ask questions. So social media is a good place to get out and start to get engaged.
Yeah, and I agree with that too, Greg. Just one comment, if I can, Corey, before you move on to the next one. It's just that we have seen when our farmers do go out there, you have to have you have to exhibit the strength not to get engaged with the anti-dairies, because they will also find you and they will ask you questions and you'll want to defend yourself. And in going back and forth with them, what you'll do is give them a platform. And I'll give you an example from the UK. We ran a campaign here, and farmers were very much at the forefront of it. And they were immediately jumped on social media by anti-dairy groups. And some of them chose to respond. And the sort of back and forwards went on for about a month. And then one particularly vocal anti-dairy person jumped on his own social media account and said, thank you much, very much to the dairy sector for giving us a platform for a month so that we could promote our views at no cost to ourselves. Now, since that time, our dairy farmers are far more, you know, they saw that. They said, yep, done that once. We're not doing that again. And they are now far more you know, engaged in social media and talking to real people, but not being dragged into stories other people want to tell.
And I would say stay in the middle of the highway and converse with 80 to 94% of the people and stay out of those two ditches. It'll serve you well. And it's hard as a human to think like that, but it will serve you well. Good advice. So our next dairy live stream will focus on sustainability, renewable natural gas that really is coming from cows, and we'll focus on dairy's rapidly evolving role in this area. The show will air in 2 weeks on Wednesday, August 18th, 2021 at 11 a.m. Central Daylight Time. Like this dairy live stream, it'll be available on the Hordes Dairyman YouTube channel and podcast channels everywhere the very next day. I look forward to seeing you then. On behalf of Greg Miller, Judith Byrons, and Andy Novakovic, I'm Corey Geiger, your host, and thank you for joining us today. We wish you all a good day. Bye, everyone.